Welcome to NACSW's Podcast of the Month. Our podcast program makes available recordings of a wide variety of NACSW presentations and discussions on topics of particular interest to Christians in social work. Our Podcast of the Month program features a new podcast every 30 days for your listening pleasure. We hope you enjoy today's podcast.
My task is to talk with you a bit about something not as onerous as budget cuts and funding and working 4 days instead of five and not being able to replace staff and challenges like that. But some of the challenges that come with volunteering and being a part of people's lives in the real intimate way that you are. I'm being filmed not because I'm important or really filmable, but because the topic is so important, not just for you all, but across the country. And there's an organization called National Association of Christians in Social Work who've created online continuing education for folks across the country. And they're interested in being able to deliver programs like this to people who need it, might not have a speaker who can come at a particular time, or social workers who need continuing education so that they can go deliver programming like this. So if you decide you want to be on film, I see some no's. We have some informed consent forms. If not, this is my colleague Nick Miller, who's just going to keep the thing on me, right?
Right.
Because I've signed my informed consent. And if you ask a question, we just won't turn the camera on you. I'll repeat the question, and we'll just take it as a generic, and you won't need to sign an informed consent. Does that sound all right? Okay. But if you want to be on film, we welcome you, and we have informed consents with us. Fair? Okay. Because we want to be legal and ethical, and we want to protect your confidentiality and privacy as well, which is why we make the offer to you, but no requirement. Well, what does confidentiality mean? Who does it apply to? What in the world are we talking about? Where is it an issue? And how can we make sure that we know what we need to know and do what we need to do? Those are a lot of important questions. I'm guessing many of you in the room are volunteers. Is that accurate? How many of you are volunteers? If you put your hands up big, you are the real heroes. Because when budget cuts happen, you just keep right on ticking and delivering, right? Keep on serving. The whole issue of confidentiality matters for volunteers and for staff because our clients and patients matter, because people have a fundamental right to privacy and a right to own their own information. And that can get a little muddy, a little murky, when they invite us into their lives because they need help, right? And because you go to their homes, you see them in their own environments, sometimes at their most vulnerable, most challenged times. And you might be the one person who they have opportunity to talk to about the things that hurt them the most, wound them the most, leave them feeling the most isolated. You might be the one person to hear those stories in any particular day or week or month or year. So what does it mean then when people share that kind of private, confidential, very human information with us? And what about the information we gather and glean? That's not what they told us, but what we observe. What about when we see conditions that might not be healthy or best for them? What if we see circumstances that make us wonder if they're being hurt or abused or wounded in some way? What's our responsibility around that information? Who owns that information, right? How much responsibility do we have to share information? What does confidentiality really mean? Does that mean I don't tell anybody anything that I've seen or heard? Who really owns the information? Those are the topics we're going to try and unpack a little bit today. And I would say to you, while it may seem obvious, probably the best rule of thumb for this is the golden rule. Do unto others, right? As you would have them do unto you. How much do I want to have the right to decide what about me gets shared with someone else? And at what point have I given up that right or shared that right with somebody else? And how did that happen? And is there a circumstance where even if I haven't given up the right or said you can share this, when it must be shared anyway? I want people to treat my information as sacred, and I sort of want to be the one who gets to decide who gets to know what. Now, do any of you go do the assessments for Meals on Wheels? Some of you do those, yeah. So you're asking people a lot of information, right? And it goes on a form, right? And the form goes in a record, which is then accessible to the rest of the staff and maybe the volunteers, maybe people, whoever is interacting with that family, right? So part of what we'll talk about is not only what information gets shared with you personally, but what does that sharing with you personally mean for the rest of an agency or a group that you're a part of? Are you bored yet? You're too kind to say so, aren't you? Well, why me? I mean, I started to ask Elizabeth, why'd you ask me to share about this? I'm just an old dried up social worker trying to figure out how to write an article or two this semester so I have a job next year, man. The social workers care a lot about confidentiality and a lot about privacy. We care about that because we fundamentally believe people have the right to self-determine. We fundamentally believe people own their own information and they have the right to decide what happens with it. And social workers work with people in all kinds of settings, and sometimes there are even laws and rules about what gets shared. So if you've been to the doctor recently, even not recently, in the last several years, they've said to you, your health information is protected by a law called HIPAA, and we need you to sign this form that we shared with you about HIPAA, and that you know your information is private. Right? Does that happen? Every time you go, and every doctor's visit. So there's federal law about the sharing of and keeping private healthcare information. In the educational setting, the law is not HIPAA, it's FERPA, the Federal Educational something, Right to Privacy Act, maybe. Does that sound right? Yeah. Alphabet soup. But it basically means that students own their own information. It doesn't mean they don't share information with us, but it means we don't get to share that information with anybody else without their permission. So a couple of years ago, I got a call from a mom. She told me she was a mom. I'm the mother of XYZ person, and I'm calling because she's having trouble in your class, and I want to talk to you about that because I am, after all, paying for her to be there at Baylor, and it's not cheap, she said. And I said, I'm not even allowed to confirm who's a student here without that student's permission. Well, I know she's a student there, she said, because I'm paying the bill. And I said, I totally get that, but I'm not allowed to confirm that she's a student here or anyone else is a student here without that person's permission. Are you telling me that you're saying she's not a student there? I said, I'm telling you, I couldn't say if she's a student here or not. She said, can you get me in touch with somebody with a brain? I said, well, it is a university, but I'll do my best. Well, what I said to her was, I will be happy to take your name and number and go and see if there is a student here by that name who's given permission to talk to you. And if that's true, I'll be able to talk with you. And if that's not true, I'll call you back and say, either there's no student here by that name, or there's a student here by that name who hasn't given permission to talk to you, but I can't talk to you. Now, I could talk in terms of generalities, right? I could say our policies around grading include our course schedules posted on the web, our admissions process for the field is posted on the web, it's public information, it's about all students. All that's accessible to you, but I can't talk to you about a particular person. I can talk to you about agency policy, school policy, mission, who we are, what we do, why we do it, but I can't tell you about Sally Smith without Sally Smith's permission. Does that make sense? My husband said, boy, Helen, you're a stickler for the rules, aren't you? So, well, I'm trying to stay out of court. But really, fundamentally, I just believe in this stuff because that's how I want people to treat my information. So maybe that's why you ask me, because I believe this matters, not just because of HIPAA and FERPA and rules, but because people have a right to their own information. And because I've had a few years as a social worker and a volunteer, and I know it can be easy when you enter the interfaces of people's private lives and painful lives, it can be easy to need to talk about that, to need to process that, to need to debrief about what we see and what we hear and what we know people are experiencing. And so figuring out who I get to talk with that about can be challenging. You all may have had some of those challenges as well. Guessing that the staff are good listening ears for you to hear. And part of what I'd encourage you to remember is that privacy and confidentiality inside an agency are inside an agency. So, if a client gives me permission to share their information, that's permission to share their information outside an agency. So, if a social worker needed to make a referral to another agency, this client needs services from so-and-so, or gave you permission to help them get services somewhere else, they would sign an informed consent and you could share their private and confidential information with somebody else outside the agency. Inside the agency, anything the client shares with you as a representative of the agency, they're sharing with the agency. So here's the rule. Need to know. Who in the agency has a need to know that information? People don't share things with me, Helen, in isolation. They share things with me, Helen, the social worker for, or the volunteer for Meals and Wheels, or in my past life, hospice. So that doesn't mean I say to the nurse, I'm not telling you what's going on with that patient because she told me and it's private. Because the nurse probably needs to know what's going on with that patient, right? But I'm not telling my friend Joanne, who's a nurse, not working for hospice, let me tell you about what I heard about today. Boy, it was a weird case. It was this and this and this going. Because Joanne's not in the agency and doesn't have a need to know. And I'm not going to tell other people in the agency that don't have a need to know to deliver services to that client. Information is owned by the client. When the client shares it with me, they share it with me as a representative of the organization or the agency. So whoever on the team needs to know, that's who I share it with. Well, what if I just need to talk? Does that ever happen to y'all? I mean, do you see things, hear things sometimes that you really need to talk about? Some of us are internal processors. go away and think about it for a while and then write in our journals with no names. And some of us are external processors, and so we need to sit down and have a conversation. Elizabeth, you won't believe what I saw today. I went into this house and there were boxes stacked to the roof in every room. Newspapers bundled, and I could barely make it down the hallway to the kitchen. And I'm really concerned, and I'm upset about this, and I don't think the client is safe there. Now, my need to process what I saw and make sense out of it, that's one piece. My concern that the client's not safe, another piece. So the question is, who can I share with my feelings, my need to debrief and externally process? And I would say to you that that needs to be in the team. And if people don't have a need to know that information, then that has to happen without the client's name, address, or any identifying information. Because when I process, I don't have to process who it was, right? So I might go see Van and say, buddy, I got to talk. Now, if I'm telling him a situation where a client's not safe, he's going to need to know who that client is. Because he's got to help me do something about it. Or he's got to do something about it, right? But if I just need to talk about my feelings and how upsetting it is, how frustrating it is that I know this person that I'm seeing is getting worse and their family's not coming to visit and they're so isolated and maybe I'm concerned that now they're leaving the stove on for heat and it could be a fire hazard and I don't want them to have to leave their home but I'm worried about their, right? And I'm concerned and worried and I'm having trouble sleeping at night because I'm worried about, he might need to hear that concern just as in terms of me processing, right? Well, Helen, are you saying I can't process with people outside the agency? I'm saying it's pretty dicey to process with people outside the agency. I'm saying I really recommend you find people inside the agency to do your feeling work with around this work. Because when you start processing what you're feeling outside the agency, with your friends or your Sunday school class, or you may discover what I discovered a long time ago, which is Waco is really not a very big city. It's really not a very big town. And it doesn't take more than three details before somebody's figured out who you're talking about. Am I right? Yeah. So even if you didn't give a name or an address, we had a patient one time in hospice who was, I'm making up details now, just so you know, 22, had a three-year-old child, had a brain tumor, and was on hospice. Those were the four details that I shared. And four people in the room knew exactly who I was talking about. No name, no address, no here's who the physician is. Four people in the room knew who I was talking about. Waco. Am I right? Waco's kind of a small town. And how many of you work even in the small surrounding towns? Yeah? So, I've never lived in a small town before. I'm a military brat. I had never lived in a small town. So I'd always lived on military bases or big cities by military bases because my dad was in the service. And then I married the principal at Crawford. You guys know Crawford?
Oh, yeah.
Here I am. All right. Okay, now don't get mad at me. I didn't know how small towns worked. And we'd been living there about maybe 6 weeks. And I went to the post office one morning, and I walked into the post office. I didn't know a lot of, I knew some people from First Baptist Church, but there were a lot of people I didn't know. And a lady stopped me, and she said, "How you doing today?" And I said, "Doing fine. How are you?" I thought she was just being nice. And she said, "I'm okay. Hey, who was that at your house yesterday?" I said, "What do you mean? Yesterday was Sunday afternoon, right? This was Monday." She said, "Well, She drove a blue station wagon. She was blonde. She looked like maybe, a little bit older than you. She got there around 2. She left about 4:30. It's like, oh my gosh, you think the NSA is bad with drones flying over. I mean, there's this woman knew exactly the description of who'd been at my house, what car she drove. I said, where do you live? She said, well, I just live across the street from you, a house or two down. I said, you got to get a life. you can't be watching my front door. So I went home and told my husband. I said, this is weird. And he said, Helen, get over yourself. In small towns, people drive right now. Everybody knows everybody. And actually, they kind of watch out for one another. So if somebody's at your house that's not supposed to be there, they're watching out for you. He's exactly right. But that illustrates, I think, how important it is to recognize in small towns, everybody knows everybody. And everybody knows everybody's business. Right? And when you go, if they don't know you, they're probably going to ask who you are and why you're there. Yeah. And if you say, I'm from Meals on Wheels, they're probably going to tell you about the 3 other people on this block who need your services. Yes? Right? Because they know everybody's circumstances. So that, it's a real strength in a small town, but it can be a little bit of a challenge around, how do I answer if they say, I know you're bringing meals to Mrs. Smith. We've been kind of worried about her. She's not getting out as much as she used to. And have you noticed that too? And have you not? She's getting kind of forgetful. And have you noticed that too? And are y'all doing something about that? Can y'all do something about that? And as soon as you start answering, saying, well, as a matter of fact, I talked to Van, and he's made a report to Adult Protective Services, right? No, we can't do that. We can't do that. Even though the neighbor may know a lot. Well, I'm sorry, I can't discuss that with you. Well, excuse me. I was trying to be helpful. So we have to even think about how we answer people in ways that are respectful to them. Respect how much they care. Respect that they want to be helpful. Respect that they assume we're helpful. And still not break confidentiality. And as an agency, that's part of the conversation you guys have. Do we wear tags that say I'm from Meals on Wheels? That's a good thing to do. And whoever we encounter going into that house knows that they're getting Meals on Wheels services. That's got to be okay with the clients. If that's okay with the clients, that's a good thing to do. But who owns their information? Part of the question to ask ourselves all the time. The definition of confidential is something that is disclosed in secret or something that's entrusted to someone else when they say to us, I have confidence in you with my information. Recognizing that when people share their information with us, when they share their story about their worry about their grandson who's dealing drugs, or their worry about their daughter who might be pregnant, or their worry about their great-granddaughter who might be pregnant, or might have HIV, or might be on the streets, or might whatever, right? What they're saying to us is, I have confidence in you. I have confidence in you to entrust you with knowledge about me and my family. When they trust us with information that they're incontinent, or they can't remember, or they haven't held anything on their stomach for 3 days, or their head hurts all the time, or they started falling and they're worried that they're going to break a hip. They're disclosing and trusting us with their information, their confidence. I have confidence in you to to tell you this hurtful thing, to tell you this potentially dangerous thing, to tell you this embarrassing thing. And the question then is, what do you do with people's confidence when they've given you their confidence, trusted you with their confidence? I think sometimes we may not even realize the impact of information, the power of what we know about people's lives. There are lots of folks who believe if we really knew them and their circumstance, we wouldn't care. We wouldn't love them. We wouldn't accept them. If you really knew me, if you really knew what's happening in my life, if you really knew how weak and frail or whatever I am, you wouldn't keep coming. And then they look at us show up time after time and they go, no, I can have confidence in you to see me the way God sees me, to see me as whole, to see me as valuable, to see me as somebody who matters and is worth your time. The impact of the information people give us, because once they've disclosed in us, once they've shared some of this information, they're watching to see how we're going to react to them next time. Are we going to come back? Are we still going to respect them? Are we still going to care about them? Are we still going to show up? Confidence. Well, it is a great and amazing gift when people put their confidence in us. And you may think you're delivering a meal, and you are, and that's nutrition, and it matters. But part of what you're delivering every time you show up at that front door is affirmation for the wonder of that human being. Every time you show up, you're saying to that person behind that door, you matter. You are important. Thank you for the confidence you put in me. You can trust me with that. That's an amazing gift. That's the difference in people being isolated and alone and people being connected. That's nutrition for the soul. Right? So be aware, be self-aware that people have given you their confidence, they give you their information, and now you've got responsibility for how you respond to that, how it impacts you, and how you're going to impact them by how you handle that information. Now we're talking about your clients. We're talking about clients of the agency. But those aren't the only people you see in the homes, are they? You don't just see the clients. You sometimes see family members of clients, friends, neighbors. So this whole notion of confidentiality and people having confidence in you and trusting you extends to everybody you encounter as a part of your work. It also extends to how you treat one another, colleagues, when you entrust each other with information. I don't know. Sometimes I think I might burn out trying to do this. Sometimes I get so tired. I just don't think. I don't know. I don't know if I could do it one more summer, one more fall. Somebody shares that with you, they've shared a deep confidence in you. How do you handle that? Does the principle of confidentiality extend to each other around these tables? I think it does. Is there somebody who has a need to know? If Elizabeth says, Helen, I just can't do this anymore, I'm going to go tell Van. And if Van won't listen, I'll tell Libby. Because Libby always listens. Or am I going to say to Elizabeth, I love you. I trust you. I hear your pain. I hear how bad you're hurting. I want to really encourage you to talk to Van about this. And then I'm going to zip it. It's so tempting the next time we get in a table full of people and we're having lunch to say, did y'all know Elizabeth's having a hard time? I'm just really worried about her. Now, don't judge me too harshly, because I'm not judging anybody else. But sometimes we even use prayer and prayer requests as a way of saying things we shouldn't be saying out loud about somebody else. We need to be praying for Elizabeth, because she's pretty discouraged right now. I'm just making all this up. You know that, right? I need to, because you're getting depressed. Man. I ought to make it you listening to me, because I am depressed. I need to be a good listener, and then I need to zip it. And I don't need to be putting that on prayer list without Elizabeth's permission. Because now, God is pretty good about keeping confidential information confidential. I don't worry too much about that one. If I, in my own prayer life, I'm not concerned about that. But I think when I start talking to other people without the permission of the person who shared with me, that's a problem. Now, is there ever an exception to that? Suppose I was talking to Elizabeth and I said, I'm so discouraged. I'm not sleeping well at night. I have any appetite. I'm just not sure any of this is worth it anymore. This seems like, you know, things just keep getting worse. Government, politicians can't agree. People out of work. I'm just so discouraged. Now we have cutbacks. I just don't think it's worth it anymore. And Elizabeth looks at me and says, Helen, you're making me a little nervous here. Are you thinking about hurting yourself? Well, suppose I said to her, well, sometimes I do think about that. Is that something she should keep confidential? No way. No way. No way. She should say to me, that's not okay with me, Helen, because I care about you. And I don't want you to hurt yourself. And we're going to get some help together right now. Because this is not something I keep to myself. You tell me you're going to hurt yourself or hurt somebody else, that's not something I keep to myself. That's something Van has a need to know. Or Libby, or my therapist, or whoever. But Elizabeth's going to help me get some help, right? She's not going to zip it about that. But once she gets me some help, I need to be on her church prayer list, right? Not without her permission. She may want some help praying for me, but it's my information. I get to say if she shares that I was thinking about hurting myself. Or I'm so depressed I'm seeing a therapist. Or whatever. Does that make sense? I own that information. So she's my good friend, and she's going to say to me, Helen, I'm going to be praying for you. That's something you would say. And I'd love to have my Sunday school group pray for you too. Would that be all right? And then I get to say, yeah, that'd be fine. Or, well, just tell them your friend needs prayer. I don't really want people I don't know knowing that I'm going through a hard time right now. Is that fair? But she's asked me. She's acknowledged that that's my information and I get to decide who knows it. Right? Sometimes we have a want to know when we don't have a need to know. Come on, tell me what's going on with Van. That's a want to know. How do you answer people when they have a want to know and you know they don't have a need to know? Are you prepared for that? Does that ever happen to anybody in the room besides me? That's none of your business. Well, that'll make friends, won't it? No. We need to be prepared for those questions. And I'd suggest to you an answer to that is, I'm so glad that you care about me, and I do too. And because I do, I know you'll respect that. That's a question you really need to ask him. Because I don't feel comfortable sharing his information. I think that's his right to share. Well, I didn't mean anything. I know you're just caring. And this is a really awkward conversation, but if you ever told me anything, or I wouldn't share with other people without your permission. I just don't do that. And I really appreciate your respect. Could that go okay? You think that could go okay? I think it could go okay. Because people fundamentally love that rule. Do unto others as you have them do unto you. How do I want people to treat my sensitive information? That's how I'm going to treat their sensitive information. So if you have a want to know, you don't have a need to know, I'm going to respectfully decline. I'm going to thank you for caring, and I'm going to invite you to talk to the person who's involved. Because here's the biggest danger, is that we go, well, I'm not supposed to talk about this, so don't tell anybody. And I tell one person, and they say, I'm not supposed to talk about this, so don't tell anybody. And I'm not supposed to talk about it. And it doesn't take long before, not only do a whole bunch of people know, but they don't know exactly the story, because every time it gets told just a little bit different, right? Is that right? And when that happens, not only have we broken confidence, but we've just created a whole new narrative that may not even be accurate. Did y'all ever play that game, Gossip? Do you remember what that's like when you whisper something in one ear and they whisper it, and then the person at the end says out loud and you go like, that's nothing like what we started with. Part of the danger of that. Don't tell anybody one by one. Need to know, are those people in the agency who have responsibility for work with that client? The people who have a need to know to do their job, their role, and responsibility. That's who we tell. And when we do documentation, we do it the same way. So do any of you do documentation? You have to write up, I made this visit, or... Right. We put what needs to be put to go in the record. The people who have access to the record are the people who need to know what's in the record. Well, I just thought I'd go see if Mrs. Smith on my block is getting meals or not. No. I only need to know about Ms. Smith if I'm delivering to Ms. Smith. If I'm not delivering to Ms. Smith, that record's none of my business. And I need to stay out of it. I need to think about electronics. How many times do we have conversation? I mean, you know, you guys, you're with me. You remember when we didn't have these cell phones? Everybody didn't have a phone? I told my daughter about that the other day. I said, you know, my second job as a social worker was in a children's home out on a ranch. We had 103 kids and about 40 staff. It took that many staff on this ranch, and we had one phone. And it was a party line with two other ranches. Y'all remember party lines? Anybody remember party lines? So you pick up the phone and you hear people talking, and then you're supposed to put it back down. But I know some people just kept listening. And if you were on call at the end of the day, you'd unplug the phone from the wall at the office, take it to your house, and plug it in. We had one phone. And when you were on call, no matter who of the 140 people at that place got a call, you answered it, and you said, give me 10 minutes and call back, and then you drive down to wherever they are, pick them up, take them to your house, so they could talk on the phone. That's how we did it. I can remember my grandmother didn't have a phone. When we called Germany, we had to write her 2 weeks ahead of time and say, on Sunday, the October the whatever, go to the neighbor's house at 3 o'clock and we'll call you. Right? Now, there are three people in my house. We got five phone lines. It's crazy, right? And we got them all the time. And we have fax machines, and we have iPads, and we have computers, and we have email. We have all this information all the time. We've got to be careful about how we use these electronics. We have digital now, not analog. I don't know a lot about the difference, but I know a little bit. I know when we had analog cell phones, way back when, I was working in hospice. The nurses and social workers all got a phone, so if they got to a patient's house, something was going on, they could call back and say, we need this medicine for Mrs. Smith, and we need these supplies for Mr. Jones, or whatever. One afternoon, some of them in the office were talking about what TV show they watch. I like to watch blah, blah. No, I like to watch so-and-so. And one lady said, I don't watch TV anymore. She said, I just turned on my police scanner, and I just tune that thing till I pick up some telephone call. Because analog phone calls, you know, they were on the same radio waves as the radio and TV and the police scanner. And she said, I just tune that thing in, and she said, you wouldn't believe, I know about who's getting a divorce, and I know who's doing what with who, and I know all kinds of... I said, wait a minute, you're listening to people's telephone calls? Yeah, that's way more fun than TV. So, oh my gosh, we're talking about our clients on these phones. Call a staff meeting. Don't give anybody's name on the phone anymore. Because there are people, she's bound not to be the only one tuning into this stuff, right? Well, that's not true anymore because these are digital now, so we don't have to worry about that. But I can tell you how many times I've sat in a restaurant or been in the hallway somewhere, been anywhere in a public place, and people just talking about whatever they want to talk about on this phone. Stuff I don't have any business overhearing. We got to be careful what we say about folks when other folks... If people have given us their confidential information, we got to treat that with the confidence it deserves. If I have to send a fax somewhere, I need to be calling that other agency and saying, or place and saying, put somebody by the fax machine. Because when I fax information about people and it lands in some office somewhere and sits on a fax machine where anybody could look at it, that's not treating people's information with very much confidence, is it? Electronics, computerized email and notes we put on our computers and our iPads don't need to have client names and identifying information on it. That stuff needs to be off. We don't need kids and grandkids and cousins and whoever coming in to use our iPad to play a game and seeing whether Ms. Smith is incontinent or not. Right? We got to treat people's information with the confidence they've given us. This is an opportunity and a challenge. And it may not be as big a challenge as budget cuts, but it's the kind of challenge that can break trust between people if we don't handle it right. It's the kind of challenge that can make people wonder if really we're for them or for ourselves. We have accountability for this in the office, at church, in our homes, in the store. I tell my clients, if I see you at HEB or Target, let's talk about how we're going to handle that. If you see me come down the aisle and I see you coming down the aisle, if you want to be recognized, then I'm going to make eye contact with you and say, hey, I'm not going to do a therapy session at HEB. So don't be telling me what happened last night, right? Call me at the office about that. But if you don't even want anybody to know that I know you or that you're seeing me, let's have an agreement about that. I see you at HEB, I'm going to act like I don't know you and just keep going. So don't get your feelings hurt, because that's how we're going to handle your confidential information that I have a professional role in your life. Because it's your right to decide how we handle that. We make an agreement about that. Does that make sense? We got to talk about these things. We got to have better boundaries. When we have better boundaries, we provide better care, and we have better results. Fewer regrets. Fewer problems that Van and Libby and Melody have to figure out. And we have more time for the real work. So I'm not saying don't debrief, don't process, don't talk about what you're feeling. I'm saying do it inside the agency. I'm not saying don't keep things secret from your rest of your team. I'm saying the team that has a need to know needs to know, and you need to tell them. But I'm saying beyond that, take this confidence people give you as a trust and be worthy of it. Thanks for your time.
Thank you for joining us today for NACSW's Podcast of the Month featured selection. We hope you found today's session useful and that it will support your efforts to thoughtfully integrate Christian faith and social work practice. We also hope that you will consider participating in additional NACSW's activities and events, including NACSW's upcoming convention in the fall, our quarterly audio conference workshops that we offer at no cost to NACSW members, and which includes free CEUs accredited by the Association of Social Work Boards, our online continuing education program, and access to dozens of archived podcasts from the members section of our website. Also, we invite you to join NACSW's Facebook group or our Facebook fan page. For additional information about these and other NACSW benefits and services, you can go to our website at www.nacsw.org. Thanks again for listening in today to our podcast session today.